There are over 2.2 million species of fungi out in the world. A form of fungi we all know as mold, of which over 100,000 types have been identified. There's the harmless molds you find growing on your bread and cheese that most say you can just cut off and that's the end of it. But that's not how mold works. Because if you're seeing it, it's already crawled through the food, forming an invisible network of tendrils, slowly consuming its host from the inside out. By the time you see the mold, it's too late for your sandwich. It has eaten, and now it's time for a new host. Of course, not all mold is harmless. I'm sure you've heard of black mold, Stachybotrys chartarum, the bad one. The black mold really isn't as scary as it's made out to be. Yes, you should have it removed, and yes, you should use respiratory protection when handling it, but it's not going to kill you the second you breathe it in. Background. I'm a carpenter who grew up in a big city. A few years back, I moved across the country to a small town in the middle of nowhere with my lifelong friend. We worked together, because there's not much else to do out here, and we lived together anyway. Jobs are few and far between starting out in a new place, so I took what I could get. About 2 months ago, I don't really know anymore. Trying to grasp a time is like holding out your hand to stop the pouring of sand in an hourglass from the side that's already spent. Doesn't matter if I catch it. It's already on this side. It's far too late, and I can't get past the rushing of new sand burying every grain below. I had an urgent call come in. It was demo and repair of some water-damaged drywall, easy enough. I had done it at least 100 times before. I figured while Cam was doing demo, I would go grab the materials, since we would have to drive by the site anyway to get to the hardware store. Whatever happened at that house, whatever crawled up from the depths of the earth and consumed the part of me that once held my own thoughts, was not pure. Nobody in this town thinks ill of the hold it has on them. But for fleeting moments, I have clarity. And in that clarity, I am reaching out to whoever may read this. Whether this thing is worldwide or just here, I do not know. People go missing around here and never turn up. Everyone just forgets about them after a week and goes on with their lives until the next one. This is not a cry for help, but a warning. There is more to Earth than we thought. The biological world runs deeper than we ever knew. Somewhere out there, people went digging where they shouldn't have been looking for wealth, and instead unleashed the wrath of a long-dormant evil. I lost my best friend in his attempt to bring his findings to the authorities. If you are reading this, whether in a fleeting moment of clarity or in a place where the puppeteer's strings do not hold, please, never come to Nova Scotia. At the time, I was getting into writing and practicing by writing my days out in a log. The following is that log. Day 1. I woke up around 6:30, made my breakfast, and threw on some YouTube while I ate. A video about horrifying organ donations. Not my best choice when eating a reheated microwave dinner for breakfast 3 days after I opened it. After my meal, I went back upstairs to wake Cam, trying to steal another half hour of sleep. I knocked on his door, cracking it open, saying,
"Good morning, princess. It's time to rise and shine."
Grinning like an idiot. What time is it?
"Time to get up, shitbird. You're on drywall duty, remember?"
Cam, in a strained morning voice, said. Man, I was really hoping I just wouldn't wake up. Neither of us care for drywall much, let alone dealing with the moldy, wet mess that comes before replacing it. Hence why I'm getting materials, and he's stuck doing the shit job. I know I'm a bad friend, but a great employer. After he gets ready, we get into the truck, and as I'm ready to pull off, he exclaims,
Wait, I left my subs. One second.
I can't help but think to myself, this guy goes to bed early, sleeps in every day, and still can't live without caffeine. As we pulled up to the house, he says,
"There's no way this is a house."
Double-checking the address, I reply,
Yeah, man. This is it."
"And you're telling me they urgently needed a single wall of drywall replaced?"
He was right in his reaction. This place was in rough shape. It's late spring, so most trees in the area have freshly sprung leaves everywhere you look, but this property leaves you feeling optimistic. The beauty and intricacies of the living world. Leaves shuddering in the gentle breeze, fresh air and birds singing with the shimmer of fresh dew reflecting rays of warm sunshine after a cold, dark winter. Then there's this eyesore, looking to be devoid of life, almost as if touched by the hand of death himself. Unkept grass, frail and dried out, stuck in a different season. The trees stripped of anything green, just sharp shapes cutting into the morning's light. And the house. My God, the house. I mean, just picture haunted house, and that's this shithole. Pieces of siding missing, leaving exposed blackened studs, shingles strewn across the yard from years of wind and decay. I can't even tell what gave out first, the sheathing or the shingle. It's like the house is rotting from the inside out, but right above the old wooden deck, held up only by the will of the dirt it now rests on, are three shiny new numbers screwed into the wall. 710 is the address I was given by the client.
"She's not much of a looker, is she?"
I say. "Not much of a looker? Brother, if I go in there, you're gonna be looking for me."
Yeah, quit your crying. Let's get the tools brought out. Then I'll get the materials as fast as I can and we can get the hell out of here together."
"You're lucky I don't go work at Wendy's and leave you to do the shit jobs."
He was right. I was lucky to have him around. Maybe I should have made that more clear before all this. Tool bags in hand, we walked up to the door, carefully treading on what's left of the deck as it creaks and crunches under the weight of two human bodies. I say with a chuckle,
"Man, she must not get out much. I don't think anyone stepped on these things in years."
"Yeah. Well, maybe you could lay off the mighty McGriddles, lard ass."
I laughed it off, but he might be right. I do be eaten. As I reached out to use the old iron knocker with a shit-eating grin, the door cracked open. And in its place, an old haggard woman with long, greasy, grayed hair, a cloudy eye, and a witch nose. I catch myself wearing a stupid smile and try to reset to my customer service face, letting out a small ahem and a brief frown, unintentionally showing my disgust at the woman and the heavy stench of rot pouring from the now open door, so strong, almost as if the air itself had spoiled. So badly, I wanted to take our tools back to the truck and save my friend from entering that godforsaken branch of hell. If I could go back, I would have, and we would burn that place to the ground together. But when you're there, and you've agreed to do a job now face to face with the person, there's a level of guilt and shame that looms behind the idea of leaving them on the notion that they are a disgusting, rotting sack of waste. Respectfully.
Sorry, we were just...
"I know, I heard you. Come, it's right this way,"
she interrupted in an old, raspy voice, opening the door fully now. Cam and I exchanged looks before stepping foot into a gorgeous interior like something out of an architectural maze. Marble floors glistening in the light of a 10,000 crystal chandelier suspended like a pendant on the neck of a peasant. It was bizarre. Why would someone ever renovate the interior to this extent while parts of the roof lay severed in the mud? She brings us to a room, which must have been someone's bedroom, imprints still pressed into the pus-yellow carpet where the bed must have been. Pointing to the wall opposite to her, as if scared to get close to it, she says,
"That's the one. I want it gone. Take it, and the devil it holds away from here. I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want it. Take it away."
She continues muttering to herself as she walks away.
"Take it away. I don't want it."
Until her voice is lost to the depths of the house. By far, one of the strangest encounters of my life. Cam and I laughed in unison, softly. Neither of us knew how to feel, whether it was pure terror that gripped us, or just a funny encounter with a crazy old hag.
"All right, well, you heard the lady. She wants it gone. Make sure you wear your mask,"
I say, tossing his respirator at him.
"If you could just start by ripping all the drywall off and bagging it up, I should be back in time to help you get it reinstalled."
All right, but lunch is on you today, Cam replied.
Yeah, guess you've earned that. Whistleberry?
I said, knowing he would say yes to Whistleberry.
That's like asking a fish if he wants water. Hell yeah, I want Whistleberry, he clapped back.
After exchanging goodbyes, I got in my truck and headed off to the store, the blackened stain fading in my rear view. I couldn't shake the feeling in my spine, like a worm twisting and contorting between each vertebra. What the hell just happened? I spoke aloud to myself. The staff were incredibly slow at the hardware store, almost like divine intervention. The computers were also having a fit that day, and it ended up being a 2.5-hour trip to and from the store. Now, back to the sites, I go in to check the progress of Cam. The walls stripped and the drywall bagged, he says.
Well, that was disgusting.
The drywall lay in the bags, gripped by a slimy fungus, each strand breaking into smaller strands, like spider veins trying to escape the old decaying flesh that contains them, like the ones on the old hag stood behind me, grinning ear to ear, who only made herself known by the warm breath I felt grazing my ear, carrying the scent of a septic tank full of decaying babies straight to my nose. I let out a stifled gag, turning to her in an instant. I realized then the smell was her, who was standing inches behind me. I said,
Oh, hey. Didn't notice you there. You startled me. Cam's been hard at work, as you can see. He got all that nasty stuff out of there. We will have it all boarded and the first coat of mud on tonight. We need to come back to finish up tomorrow, though.
It was at this point I noticed the respirator I chucked to Cam still resting in the same spot, as if he had never worn it. But before I could ask about it, the woman let out a very long, raspy sigh, longer than you ever would without having to force it out, followed by the question.
Did it get you?
I'm sorry, Cam replied.
It'll get you. It'll get you. Warm and wet, it creeps inside. Warm and wet, where it resides,
she said in a sing-song voice. The color left his face as if the blood in his veins was replaced by cold, white ice. She walked away, holding her smile, shoulders high like the pull of 1,000 lost souls down to hell had finally subsided. The piercing look she cut through Cam with did not give the impression those souls were freed, but rather their anchor passed. He stands, dead-eyed, unable to muster the words to describe the internal turmoil as his world has been stripped of light, love, and joy, leaving the husk of himself standing like an idiot with a broken sheet of drywall in one hand and a hammer in the other. I say,
well, this has been an odd day, but you should close your mouth before you catch a fly.
I let out a small laugh, trying to lighten the mood.
Sorry, I'm not really sure what to make of what just happened, he replied.
Well, if you want to take lunch, we can grab some of the best burgers on this side of the country. Huh? Huh?
I said, poking him childishly.
Let's just get this shit over with. I can't even think about food right now, he said, defeated.
I knew something was very wrong, and the childish humor wasn't going to snap him out of it. It's one thing for him to say no to Whistleberry. It's expensive, but to say no to free Whistleberry is unheard of. We wrapped up the day in 3 more hours. It was pretty quiet. He didn't say much, and the old lady was nowhere to be found. The drive home was strange. The whimsy of the spring ambience was dead. Rows of houses, now just scars hacked into the dirt, muddying up the view of starving trees grasping for more sunlight in the world's slowest, most pathetic race for survival. That house left me feeling like my mind was being slowly unraveled, but Cam, I have never seen in such a state. He was unhappy. He, however, ravaged every ray of light that dared near him, like a black hole was forming in him, ready to engulf the world in its darkness. Being around him after that felt like the good of your soul was being siphoned, like your very being was a disgrace to him. We pulled into the driveway and got out of the truck. With my realization, I said,
"Ah, shit, man, we forgot to bring all this to the dump."
In one grunt of a word, he said,
"Tomorrow."
I didn't bother responding out loud. He was not in any mood to talk, so I figured I'd give him some space for the night and watched some movies on my own until bedtime. Day 2. Waking up to the piercing sound of the standard iOS alarm never gets better, but at least in the groggy moments following, I was at peace. Today, I decided I would wake Cam up at the same time as me. I knocked on his door, cracking it open, saying,
"Wakey wakey, little bud, it's time for school."
His room had a very musty smell, like he had left wet clothes lying around for too long. From the darkness, he let out the words,
"No work today. I'm sick."
The disembodied words carried through the darkness with the feeble push of his weakened diaphragm. Somehow, forgetting the antics of yesterday in my morning state, I figured he caught a cold and just needed the day. I rushed off to the dump, grabbing breakfast on the way, a mighty McGriddle. I chuckled, remembering what he said on the deck the day before, only to then remember the horrors of the day and where I was headed after the dump. Pulling up to the scale at the dump, I rolled down my window, greeted by a puffy-eyed scale worker. She was always my favorite one. I asked her,
"Is everything all right?"
She replied,
"Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry."
Wiping tears from her now watery eyes.
"It's just been tough since my niece went missing."
I never really kept up with the news or politics, but when people go missing as often as they have been in a small town, the news finds you. I did hear about a young girl and boy going missing when they were out playing in their yard. I had no idea they were her relatives. I said,
I'm so sorry to hear that. It's such a tragedy, all these missing people.
I heard they're bringing out other counties and search and rescue teams in to help find them. Surely they'll find them." Knowing I was lying to her and myself. The last 7 missing persons are assumed dead, so why would the kids be any different? She said,
"Thank you for the kind words. All we can do is hope and pray."
I don't pray. If God was there to help us, where was he when famine and plagues wiped out countries of good people? Or when people were put on boats and shipped out to live at the end of a chain and paid in lashings? I wanted to say, all we can do is hunt the sick son of a bitch down who's doing this and skin him alive. But instead, I said, "God bless," and drove on through. Opening the bed of my truck, the bags of drywall had changed overnight. Some bags painted black from the inside as the mold within tried to claw its way out. Some with streaks of yellow and green slime mold gripping the bag. But the one that really caught my attention was the one that had torn under the pressure of the jagged form within. On the tip of the drywall that had pierced the bag, catching the flicker of light passing through the trembling leaves, was a single form. A black, ferrofluid-like substance. It almost looked like it was poorly imitating a mushroom. I had never seen anything like it. I should have taken a picture, but instead, I hurled it down into the bins and moved on with my day. Coming down the street, back to the hag's house, I felt a wave of relief knowing this was my last day there, but that relief was short-lived. Between the two houses where the house was yesterday was freshly placed sod. No dried-out, unkempt grass, no decaying deck, no fragments of roof strewn about, no giant eyesore assaulting property values. It was just gone, without a trace.
How the hell is that even possible to do overnight?
Nobody responded because I was alone in my truck. I tried texting, emailing, and calling the old hag. Nothing. Straight to a "this number has been disconnected" message. So, the next most logical thing to do was ask the neighbors. Their homes were night and day compared to what was their neighbor yesterday. White picket fence and everything in its place. I rang the doorbell and was greeted by a middle-aged man in formal wear.
"Hey, sorry to bother you. I was doing some work yesterday for your neighbor. Or, I guess, what was your neighbor. And
To my surprise, there's no house there. Do you have any idea what happened last night to the house right over there? I asked, pointing at the only empty lot in this human zoo of a suburb.
He replied, "Not sure it was there yesterday." He shrugged and closed the door abruptly.
I ran the same pitch for the other neighbor, and she was at least a little patient. She told me,
"Oh, yes, Jezebel. She was an odd one. She never really got out much since her husband went missing all those years ago. I'm not really sure what happened to her house, though. Seems rather odd it would just grow legs and walk away."
I laughed out of respect, but nothing about this was funny. Obviously, the house didn't actually grow legs and walk away, but why was everyone being so nonchalant about it? What were they hiding? I headed back home and checked on Cam, giving a knock on his door and asking,
"How you feeling, Pookie Bear? You tell me you want me hurt?"
Expecting to hear a "shut the fuck up" through the door. Instead, he said,
"I'm alright, man. Just woke up feeling a little rough, but I'm better now."
His voice too chipper to be that of the same man I watched having his soul contorted like a balloon animal yesterday. Usually, if he was in a good mood, he'd come out and talk, but not today. And I'm not just going to barge in if it's not a wake-up call. God knows what he could be doing in there. I left him to his own devices and had a pretty uneventful evening just watching YouTube. Now I'm writing this before I head off to sleep. Day 3. With nothing on the docket for the day, I figured I'd just make a couple YouTube videos, playing horror games, stocking up on content before I was busy again. My work is feast or famine. My days are usually quite full when there are jobs on the go, but not every job requires two people. Today, I got another solo job requested a few hours out, so I'll be getting a hotel starting tomorrow until I finish up, which could take a week. Great news for my bank account. Bad news for Cam. He's on cat duty, which means while I'm gone, he will have to feed the little guy and change out the turd sound. At his door, again, I say,
"Hey man, I got another job far out, so I need you to take care of Morty while I'm gone. You know where all the stuff is? Of course, I'll leave you with a 50 for the trouble."
Again, from behind the closed door, he says,
"Not a problem. You know I love the little guy."
But he was close. Too close to have walked up just then without hearing me. His bed and computer were on the other side of the room. There was nothing by his door. A little weirded out, holding on to the feeling he was just listening to me through the door, I packed up my things and headed to sleep for the night. Day 5. Didn't bother writing yesterday. Didn't really have the time. But I noticed today my key for the basement door was no longer on my loop. There's no way it could have fallen off, right? It's a pain in the ass to get those things off. So my only thought was maybe Cam had taken it in case the plumbing had an emergency, which is fair enough. If I had any sense, I would have left it there anyway. What's strange is he's not answering any of my messages. He usually does within an hour, and I know he's home. Day 10. There's a very foul smell around the property. Like a rotted hand reached up my throat, pulling my tongue to my gut every time it wafts in. Normally, I would just suspect a creature died out in the forest, but this time, I dreaded knowing the truth. Morty always greets me at the door, especially if I've been away for some time. Not yesterday. Not even this morning. I figured he was just sleeping in Cam's room, but Cam hadn't even come out to say hi or anything. I waited until 10 a.m. to knock on his door this time. When knocking, I cracked it open.
"Hey, what's up, bud? How was it?"
"It was great. We loved having the place to ourselves."
"Our self? Got a little case of the schizophrenia there, buddy?"
"No. The cat. Remember?"
"Oh, yeah, that little meatbag. Where is he anyway? He always greets me at the door."
"Not sure. I haven't seen him today."
"Well, shit, man. He's not in the house. I looked everywhere he normally hides anyway."
Cam shrugged,
letting loose a puff of coal-black dust dancing and shimmering in the beam of light prying through his covered window. The musty smell of his room now overpowering, gushing into the clean air of the hallway. Like the remnant stench of a mummified corpse escaping a long-sealed crypt. It was not my place to tell him to clean his room. How he could sleep in that reek was a problem of his, not mine. My break from all these oddities was nice. I'd almost forgotten the strange occurrences of the week before. Being back, however, the peculiarities of this town once again made themselves known, now more than ever. I had to find my boy. I tore the house apart, searching every possible place he could be hiding away, hoping he had found a nice nook to curl up in, purring away at life's simplicity in the mind of a cat. He was nowhere to be found. I went back upstairs to prod further at Cam, asking, "He's not here, like, anywhere. There's no way he's in the house unless he's in here with you." Cam replied,
"I haven't left the house. I'm not sure how he could have gotten out."
Worried maybe he snuck by me when I was bringing my tools inside, I called the local SPCA, asking them if they had seen or heard any reports of a wandering furball. They told me they would call me if anything turns up. Now, all I can do is hope and pray he finds his way back home. Funny how I'm not religious until I need the hand of the so-called God. Day 11. It's been a long but refreshing day. I decided I would build him a nice cat tree with extra lumber I kept in the basement for when he comes back home. I promised myself, and my now vagrant foe son, if he came back, I would treat him like royalty, showering him in gifts and treats like some Egyptian Bastet. Grabbing my keyring, I remembered the vacancy of one spot, the basement's key. I woke Cam with the question.
"You haven't seen the key to the basement kicking around, have you?"
He shot me a piercing look that cut into my eyes like a hot blade, scorching any purity left in my tattered mind.
"No,"
he said sternly.
"I have not seen the key. I've told you that already. Why do you even need to go down there anyway?"
I replied, "Just wanted to grab some of my lumber and build the boy something nice for when he comes home." To that, he said,
"Funny of you to assume he's coming back. Nothing that goes missing out here just turns back up."
It was disheartening to hear such a pessimistic sentiment from someone I call my best friend. Especially when talking about a beloved pet we both adored. It was then I noticed a darkening of his carotid artery. Like a black sludge so dark and thick it radiated through the veins, devouring the light cast upon it. On the surface, I saw a small puff of mold flowering from his skin. This was all too weird. I knew something was in the basement, and he did too. Something he didn't want me to find. I broke off the conversation by saying,
"One can only hope. I'm gonna go get some flyers printed and put them around town."
"Good idea. Then at least he will know you're looking for him,"
he replied with a smirk. I shut his door and made my way outside. I had no intention of putting out flyers. At this point, I was convinced Morty wasn't coming back. I grabbed my crowbar from my trunk and made my way to the basement door. Outside, below the window, at the bottom of the stairs. Making sure I was not exposed to the sightline of the bedrooms, I ducked down and smashed the lock with a heavy blow. Two bright sparks flared. Their light burned away in an instant, leaving nothing but the deafening crash echoing off the trees. "Of course that didn't work, you idiot," I muttered to myself in shame. I elected to open the door with a kick, putting every ounce of pain and fear welling up inside me into one good attempt. The door separated from the lock, leaving fragments of the wooden obstruction intertwined in the screws that once bound the latch. Out poured the familiar stench of death and decay once married to the old hag. I vomited at the sight. There, in the middle of the mudded basement, my precious Morty. Gripped by the same vein-like slime branching from him, reaching into the earth, turning my once prized pet into mud. The eyes that once greeted me with innocence when I woke, begging for another bowl of food, now home to hundreds of wriggling larvae, feasting upon the nutrients that made up his now rotted vessel. The buzzing of flies tormented my every thought as I took a step forward. Behind me, I heard Cam say,
"Well, isn't that a shame?"
I turned around and yelled,
"What did you do to him?"
Cam replied,
"I didn't do anything to him. He must have gotten lost down there."
"That's impossible. There's no way down here except through the door, which was sealed shut without a key."
I yelled back. He shrugged once again, sending the small spores on his shoulder tumbling carelessly through the air. In my anger, as I filtered the stench-ridden air with my lungs, breathing rapidly, wanting to sink my crowbar into the husk of my once friend, I smelled it. Sweet vanilla mixed with charred oak. The best scent my nose has ever known. A warm feeling washed over me, like all my troubles were in the wind. Strange, the effect a breath of fresh air has on a troubled mind. Day 12. Not really much of a reason to be writing all this anymore. We've sorted it all out. It was just a misunderstanding. I guess I must have accidentally locked Morty down there. Oh well. I'm not really in the mood to deal with all the mold in Cam's room, so we've got some restoration guys coming in the morning to fix it all up. It really is a shame to see it go, the way it creeps up the wall, a soft embrace to a cold, hard surface. Clusters of elegant spores forming rolling hills along the wall, none in competition with one another, just an equal desire to spread its roots far and wide for its species' survival. It's mesmerizing to look at its beautiful innocence. It's not hurting us, but we're just sharing our vessels. But as with the hag before us, our turn is up. Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.